Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio, on every U.S. military base in the world, on your electronic device via TuneIn, Progressive Voices, Tom Hartman app, and simulcast as television via Free Speech TV Network on Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems all over the country.
Here, a sip of water. There we go. Pardon me. So, a lot to talk about today. There's a lot going on. Congressman Ro Khanna is going to join us for the hour. We'll be with him to take your calls if you want to get in line and get on the queue, as it were. Also, it looks like the Republican Party is facing kind of their own Sophie's choice here. Trump either runs as a Republican or as an independent. What will that do to the Republican Party? And geeky science. Can the average person only trust five people? This is fascinating. Just a little footnote. I caught this from the writing this morning, the newsletter that, you know, summarizes what's going on the right wing in the blogosphere and whatnot. And the latest hysteria here about Jack Smith, the special prosecutor who's going to be looking into Donald Trump and friends. And I haven't been able to confirm this, but it is, the source here is Newsweek. So I'm, you know, which is, you know, under private ownership now, but I believe is still fairly credible, is that Jack Smith is married to a woman named Katie Chevigny, C-H-E-V-I-G-N-Y, however you pronounce that, and that she worked as a producer on the movie Becoming, which was about Michelle Obama, and she also donated to Joe Biden's 2020 campaign. So, oh my God, he's married to a Democrat. You can tell, right now, the meltdown is going to begin. They're going to be investigating him in Congress. It's going to go nuts. But, you know, the larger question, and one that I think the Republican Party is really struggling with right now, is the, you know, the only declared Republican for the presidency in 2024 has not been a member of Congress is Donald Trump. And, you know, you and I both know he did this in order to get around the Justice Department, which, frankly, I think blew up in his face. I don't think Jack Smith is going to let him off the hook at all. Plus, Jack Smith's tenure may well outlast the Biden presidency. But in any case, here's Donald Trump. And what happens if he becomes the Republican nominee? I think it's a virtual certainty that he loses the White House. I mean, the Democrats would have to run a really terrible candidate. But it looks like, you know, Trump is a real drag on the party right now. People are just tired of him. And on the other hand, if the Republican Party doesn't embrace him, he might just walk away and say that he's actually going to be running an independent candidacy, which would be kind of a cool thing, actually, because it would take a lot of votes away from the Republicans and guarantee a Democratic presidency. So here you got, you know, Mike Pence and Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley and all these others who want to be president, presumably Rick Scott and others. What are they going to do? I mean, it looks to me like this party is in a real crisis. We hear, you know, we read all this stuff about it, Democrats in disarray. No, I think it's the Republican Party that's in a panic right now. So how do you think this is going to play out? This is like kind of a Sophie's choice. Also, a quick geeky science for you on the other side of the break. The average person has 5 people in their lives they trust. It's fascinating. This study says, or studyfinds.org is a fascinating website. Every now and then they pop up some of the most curious geeky science stuff. And our geeky science for today, the average American has 5 people in their life with whom they have a strong enough relationship that they feel that they can basically lean on that person or call on that person for anything. It really got me thinking about this. I can think of maybe 3 people in my life, and I can extend that probably to another 3, but that's it. I mean, really, there's probably only 6 people that I'm really close to. And they go on to note, outside of their close circle, people have some of the best partnerships with their neighbors and their doctors. And nearly a third of employed respondents said that one of their strongest partnerships is with a coworker, 31%. Half of those surveyed use technology more during the holiday season to keep in touch with loved ones than at other times of year. 51% even attribute the closeness of their relationships to technology. I know 2 of my best friends, one lives in Australia, one lives in Israel. And every month since the pandemic, we've gotten together on Zoom. My other best friend lives in New York. We just talk on the phone constantly. And then I have some very close friends here that with whom I've worked for over a decade. Particularly Sean has been with me over 15 years, I think, and Nate over a decade. And we all love Joyce. But it's fascinating. They also said that some people have relationships with businesses. 83% of Americans said that they form strong relationships with small businesses, something that doesn't happen with larger, medium-sized businesses. Fascinating stuff. Anyhow, so much for geeky science. We've got a lot to talk about today. Congressman Ro Khanna is with us. He represents the 17th District of California in the U.S. House of Representatives. He's vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He's the author of a new book, Dignity in the Digital Age. His website is Khanna, khanna.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna, R-O Khanna. And Congressman Khanna, welcome back to the program. It's been a while since we've talked. What's on your mind today?
Tom, great to chat. I don't think we've talked since the election. It was a much better result than we all expected. We're now focused on the lame duck as soon as we get back from Thanksgiving to make sure we increase the debt ceiling so the Republicans don't try to sabotage the economy, make sure we actually fund the National Labor Relations Board so we can enforce the violations against all these wonderful organizing efforts at Starbucks, Amazon, Chipotle. And then we should need to fund the Ukraine aid because the Republicans have threatened in the House not to do that.
Do you think it's going to work? You think it's going to happen? You can get stuff done?
I do. I do think we'll succeed on the debt ceiling. I think we will succeed on the Ukraine aid. The NLRB is a bigger challenge. It really matters. It's consequential, but it hasn't gotten the attention that it needs. And it requires about $100 million of funding so that they can actually protect workers who want to organize.
Is there any possibility that the twin legislation, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and the old H.R. 1, America, what was it? I'm forgetting the title of it, of the act.
The Democracy Reform Package.
Yeah. Those two pieces of legislation, they passed the House. In the Senate, they were defeated. But did Chuck Schumer vote no so that he could bring them back up? Or is there some way that they could be brought back up? Is there any possibility of some arm twisting, maybe offering Kyrsten Sinema an ambassadorship someplace if she'll just resign and let the next Colorado Democratic governor appoint somebody to replace her? And I don't know if that's the thing to do, but whatever. I mean, is there any way to make this happen?
Yeah. Well, the For the People Act and the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
The challenge is, as you know, it's Arizona Sinema and Manchin have remained opposed to any reform on the filibuster. And so I think they should make it another go at it. They should try every possible thing. But it is it's been difficult because you've got 2 holdouts. And in this case, it's not that there are other holdouts. I literally think those 2 individuals are holding up these bills.
Yeah. It just seems like it's so important. I mean, particularly the For the People Act, which deals with, money in politics. It deals with gerrymandering. My understanding is that more or less on the neighborhood of 10, maybe as many as 15 seats in the House right now are occupied by Republicans that would have been occupied by Democrats if states had simply not as radically gerrymandered as they had. Three states did it in defiance of court orders, and the governors of the states just said, hey, screw you to the courts, try and enforce it, and went ahead with gerrymandered districts anyway. I mean, it seems so important to deal with that.
Absolutely. The gerrymandering, we would have a majority if it weren't for gerrymandering. I mean, a district like Tom Malinowski's, we would have won in New Jersey. We wouldn't have had the same consequences in Florida. I mean, people forget that Florida was a consequence of DeSantis basically doing the most partisan redistricting. It wasn't just winning elections. And then the money, I mean, the dark money, millions of dollars of dark money coming into these seats is also incredibly distortive of the process. And these Republicans are complaining that they were outspent in some of these seats. They should join us in just saying prohibit corporate money into elections and have restrictions on private money coming in. But of course, not a single Republican supports any of the campaign finance reforms.
Yeah, it's truly tragic. Well, let's pick up some phone calls here. Congressman Khanna is with us for the hour, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. David in Columbus, Ohio, you are on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, Congressman. I gave to a lot of Democratic candidates across the country. Do you see, and most of them said they do not take corporate money. Do you see a trend away from taking corporate money toward more progressive candidates? And I think the Democrats' strength is their volunteers. You can get thousands and thousands of volunteers, not corporate money. So what do you think?
I do. I mean, when I have not taken a dollar in my whole career, not just of corporate money, of any PAC money. One of seven members who doesn't take PAC money. But I see an increased move of not taking corporate money. I don't think, unfortunately, that's the solution. And the reason that isn't a solution is that, let's say you get even 100, 150 members of Congress who take that pledge. What you have is big oil and pharma and these insurance companies targeting the one or two members on the relevant committees to stop the progressive popular legislation. So even if you have 100, 150 members who have taken this pledge, it's better than nothing, but it's not solving the systematic problem of why we can't get Medicare for all, why we can't get a windfall tax on big oil. We really need comprehensive campaign finance reform.
Katie in Seattle, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Oh, good morning. My question regards seats on airplanes. I'm a small woman. I just flew a couple weeks ago, and I cannot even reach to get something underneath the seat because my arms aren't long enough in flight. My concern is that in the event of an emergency, I don't think we're all going to be able to get out of there with the seats packed in as tightly as they can. Are you doing something about this in Congress right now? Thank you.
Well, Katie, let me raise your concern, but generalize, and that is that I'm hearing from many people that they don't feel their rights are being respected as passengers. And I do think that we should be looking at a passenger bill of rights in the next Congress, both what do we need to do to make sure people are safe, regardless of their size? What do we need to do to make sure that you don't have cancellations of flights without just compensation? What do we do to make sure that people are treated respectfully and comfortable? And I do think some kind of passenger bill of rights would be a good initiative in the next Congress.
Congressman Ro Khanna is with us for the hour, taking your calls in a National Progressive Town Hall meeting. Congressman Khanna, the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, representing the 17th District of the state of California in the U.S. House of Representatives. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Congressman Khanna in just a moment. You can find Congressman Khanna's website at Khanna, khanna.house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you.
Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is Seek and Hide, The Tangled History of the Right to Privacy by Amy Gajda. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. This is from the introduction. It would seem that a pair of tights and a snap camera started it all. That's because the scandalous leg gear and the troubling new technology got a mention in the fourth paragraph of an 1890 law review article by the attorneys Louis Brandeis and Sam Warren, one that many say marked the start of the legal right to privacy in the United States. The law partners wrote that a theatrical performance that same year had sparked a somewhat notorious case. The story goes that Marion Manola, singer, actress, and star of Broadway's Castles in the Air, wore gray silk tights as a provocative part of her art. Tights back then set tongues wagging. They had a sensual cling at a time when women wore thick dresses that plunged to the ground and sashayed around there so that no one much knew what shoes looked like either. Tights on a stage actress allowed men to see the curves from her hips to her toes. Such distraction was not universal, however, and Manola's silken legs failed to move the day's theater critics. Castles in the Air is a, quote, perfect abyss of weariness, was the Evening World's assessment. The New York Times called it an apparent failure. But Manola's trim and attractive figure kept audiences coming nonetheless. The theater manager, recognizing even meatier marketing potential, wished to capture an image of Manola in her ensemble. "She is my chief soprano," was his public explanation. Newspaper headlines from Friday, June 13, 1890, made clear that Manola absolutely, positively refused. New York, colon, "She won't be taken in tights." Chicago, "Will not be photographed in tights." In Boston, the Globe put it patronizingly, "Miss Manola in distress will resign rather than be photographed in her tights." Live performance was one thing, but still photography seemed an invasion entirely different. Then came trouble, just as any careful reader would have expected. Quite literally, the next evening, as Manola ran toward the open arms of a co-star in the second act, a flash of light and a puff of smoke erupted from the Broadway Theater's balcony. The manager had placed a snap camera in an upper box. A photographer had captured Manola and the not-too-slender, not-too-plump, graceful and shapely contents of the darker gray tights. News coverage of the outrage appeared at about the speed of the snap flash. Quote, "The 1.5 million people in New York are not bothering themselves about the silver bill, the federal election law, or the other issues which interest the country at large," the Atlanta Constitution reported. "The New Yorkers have nothing in view but Miss Manola's tights, and just at present they are discussing nothing else." Women rallied to Manola's cause, crediting her for standing firm against a clear male desire to exploit a woman's choice. The entire sympathy of all of her sex and the best of the community stood with the actress. Some men, on the other hand, struggled to understand why this particular photo was such a big deal. They'd seen Manola's silky legs before, not only on Broadway, but on cabinet cards published when she starred in the risque Boccaccio. Her tunic back then supported a tantalizing fringe that covered her pelvic region just so, with tight, light tights doing the rest of the work. We'll never know what Manola's legs looked like during her Castles in the Air performance, however. A judge immediately sided with the actress, her sex, and the community's best, and ordered that the manager never, ever develop the photo, let alone publish it. And the story might have ended there. But the idea of that personal invasion fit perfectly into a narrative building in the mind of the attorney Sam Warren back in Boston. Warren saw a different sort of marketing potential in Manola's legs. The viral tale could help support his call for what he called a newfangled right to privacy. This was solid proof that cameras could and people would capture embarrassing images from real life far beyond the woodblock portraits that already tormented the rich and powerful back then. Heck, the so-called snap or detective camera was even marketed in such a privacy-invading way. Ads promised that it could record the countenance and pose of an unsuspecting victim who would be unaware until it was too late. Mrs. Grover Cleveland, a friend of Warren's, had it particularly bad. She was, quote, haunted by amateurs, end quote, headlines read, the dozens of hopeful photographers who waited for a glimpse of the First Lady. Some of their cameras were shaped like purses. Others looked so much like handguns that people could have shot to kill a paparazzo, and nobody would have questioned it even for a second. The autograph-seeking fans who similarly frenzied around the French actress Sarah Bernhardt to invade her privacy during her U.S. tour in the 1880s, they now had a weapon much mightier than the pen. Today, the 1890 plea for the right to privacy written by Warren and his law partner, the future Supreme Court Justice Brandeis, is used to support legal protection not only for the haunted and the hunted, but also to justify protection for everything from sexual intimacies and private scandals to police eavesdropping and computer data. Judges routinely laud the reasoning and quote the language of the right to privacy in publication cases, as well as in cases involving presidential privilege, civil rights, drug testing, freedom of information, and many others. The book is Seek and Hide by Amy Gajda, The Tangled History of the Right to Privacy. And welcome back. Jim in Long Beach, California. You are on the air with Representative Khanna.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
I have a question. Will the House bring up the House Resolution 87 to stop funding Saudis in Yemen?
Great question. Let's see what he has to say.
Well, Jim, as you know, Bernie Sanders and I led the War Powers Resolution that passed against refueling Saudi planes. This is something I've been passionate about for 6 years, my whole time in Congress. I'm now leading with Blumenthal a resolution to stop arms sales to Saudi Arabia. I support any restrictions on giving them more weapons. And I was disappointed that the administration gave immunity to MBS for the crimes that he has committed against Khashoggi and in Yemen. So we will continue to build support to hold Saudi Arabia accountable.
Mark in Long Beach, you're on the air with Congressman. A lot of calls from Long Beach. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yes, Mr. Khanna, two quick questions for you. The first one is, 12 Republicans in the Senate broke the filibuster to protect the gay marriage, and Chuck Schumer said that they're going to do it before the Republicans take control of the House. Do you know when the vote is going to be taken for the Senate and the House? That's my first question.
I imagine the first week or second week that we're back, but I'm very confident that this will pass.
All righty. We get one question a day here. John in Kashmir, Washington. Hey, John, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Good morning. I called in to Tom's show and spoke with either Congressman Khanna or Congressman Pocan over a year ago, and I asked the basic question of what is being done to Trump-proof the presidency.
I remember.
Okay, it was you then. I don't believe that anything's been done in Congress. I think all the emphasis has been toward the DOJ acting, which they haven't moved very fast. There's one basic thing that could have been done is require all federal candidates to disclose their tax returns. Real simple. Trump would have never done that.
Well, John, I obviously support that. The challenge is that you wouldn't get the Republican support for that in the filibuster-proof Senate, and that's the unfortunate thing about not eliminating the filibuster. What we will get done, I'm pretty hopeful in the lame duck, is the Electoral Count Act reform to make sure that the states actually have to honor who wins the popular vote in that state.
Congressman Ro Khanna is with us for the hour, taking your calls. We'll be back with more of your calls for Congressman Khanna in just a moment. You can check out his website at khanna.house.gov. Welcome back, Congressman Ro Khanna, taking your calls for the hour. David in Woodland Hills, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Thank you. I have a question about that program where the doctor can change you to Medicare Advantage without your knowledge. First of all, what's the name of that program? And that's not my question.
It's a restriction. I mean, I don't know the exact name, but what they're doing is a pilot program where they're basically forcing people.
Medicare. I think it's called ACO Reach.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so here's my question. If my doctor does that and I continue to pay my Medigap premiums, aren't I then in both programs, kind of like having two life insurance policies?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, the challenge is, you know, what happens if you then try to go back to Medicare? Because one of the challenges of going back and forth between Medicare is that Medigap then can discriminate against you. They don't have to give you the insurance. So my guess is that you're paying the Medigap insurance to keep it at an extra cost to what you're already doing. It's why this shouldn't be happening without consent, and all of the progressives have opposed, many of the progressives have opposed the ACO Reach program.
Johnny in New York City, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
How are you doing today?
Hi, Johnny.
Hey, here's my question. Is the Democratic Party, as a white male, union guy, how do you expect me to support your party anymore when you vilify the white male? Every time you turn on the TV, the Democrats are on TV, you're talking about white supremacy this, racism that, white male this, white male that. How do you expect me to even vote for anybody? And you have Democratic school boards run by Democrats who force transitioning to children. And if you speak out about it, you're vilified.
Sorry, I thought Johnny was done. I think you got his point.
Well, Johnny, first of all, I suggest you look at my speech or op-eds on economic patriotism. It's all about bringing back manufacturing jobs. It's all about this view that we made a huge mistake in this country by offshoring all our production, hollowing out communities. We don't make steel here. We don't make aluminum here. I want to bring those jobs back, and I have a plan for how we do that. That's going to help factory towns. That's going to help the white working class. It's going to help the black working class, Latino working class. It's going to make us stronger and economically more prosperous. So I would argue that our policies are good for working class people, regardless of race. On your point about trans kids, I mean, I believe that trans children deserve basic rights to be able to do whatever their parents think is necessary and that their doctors think are necessary. And no one that I know in a school board is trying to make that decision. What they're trying to say is let people decide with their families and doctors what's right for them.
I remember when Republicans used to campaign on parental rights. It's apparently not anymore. David in Canterbury, Connecticut. David, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Representative Connor, it's great you got reelected, and we got four more progressives in the House, and that's great. We got to keep going. My question is, with the January 6th committee coming to an end, I know there are quite a few Congress people, Congress critters involved in the insurrection itself. Do you have any knowledge about what's going on, what may go on with Prosecutor Jack Smith, and if there's any rumblings about anything going to be done about these folks in Congress? And I'll wait for your answer. Thank you very much.
You know, I don't have knowledge, and that's a good thing, because that shows that the Justice Department really is keeping this independent. They don't consult us. They don't tell us anything in Congress. And I have said to my colleagues, I think the less we say, the better. They're consummate professionals, and they need to show that this is an independent investigation, and they're following the law and the facts, and I think they will.
Mary in Elk Grove Village, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Oh, thank you. Thank you both for what you do. A couple weeks ago, maybe a week or so ago, I was watching television, and I saw an advertisement for WellCare, and it sounded eerily familiar. It sounded almost verbatim what the Medicare Advantage commercials are advertising. And I know that you guys have a bill saying that Medicare Advantage cannot use the word Medicare, but is this new program, and this is very smart of them, are they trying to backdoor their little programs by just switching up the names?
Are they rebranding?
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for raising that, and I'll look into it. But at the very least, we can agree that they shouldn't be calling Medicare Advantage Medicare. It's just two different programs. I mean, Medicare Advantage, you can't go see any doctor. In Medicare Advantage, you don't have the same guarantee on your catastrophic coverage taking place, and you have to seek prior authorization, and you get a lot of claims denied, where that's not the case with Medicare. So call it private insurance. Call it what it is. And that's what Mark Pocan and my bill does.
How's that bill doing, by the way?
You know, we're trying to first get support among progressives, which I think we will, and then next Congress build broader support. But I'm hoping this is not just a progressive issue. This should, I mean, progressive is a view that we need Medicare expanded. But certainly call something honestly what it is. That should be all Democrats for, basically consumer protection.
Yeah, yeah. The New York Times actually has done a good job of calling this out. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Congressman Ro Khanna in just a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Representative Khanna is vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He represents California's 17th district, Khanna.house.gov, and Rep. Ro Khanna on Twitter.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome back to our National Progressive Town Hall meeting with Congressman Ro Khanna, Vice Chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, with Charles in Gold Hill. You're on the air, Gold Hill, Oregon. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, gentlemen. I have one statement and two questions. Medicare.gov steers people to Medicare Advantage. I was on the website yesterday. And my question for Ro Khanna is, why is not the 14th Amendment, Section 3 and Section 4 being enforced? Section 3 dealing with the insurrectionists that are in office and running for office, and Section 4 being the debt ceiling that cannot be questioned. Why do we just not ignore the debt ceiling and adhere to the Constitution?
Well, I agree with you on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. I've been calling for that. People like Jamie Raskin has been calling for that. It would basically bar insurrectionists from running for office. It was used after the Civil War, and we should be more aggressive, but it still would take majorities, at least in the House and Senate, to be able to do that. On the debt ceiling, I do think I'm open to looking at any avenue that's constitutional that wouldn't require us continually to raise it, because it's just become a political football.
Dan, in Miami, you are on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, thank you very much. I have a follow-up to the question about the insurrectionists among you in Congress. Why is it that, well, first of all, you have a committee that's supposed to be looking into whether there are any insurrectionists within the House rules. Article 1, Section 5 of the Constitution establishes that the House can set rules on who the members might be. And second of all, you know, even if they haven't really finished investigating whether there are members who are insurrectionists, why don't you just offer a resolution to the effect that everyone who is a member of Congress should not be an insurrectionist and see who votes for it?
Well, that's a good idea. I mean, I do think having that kind of resolution would be a good thing. But, you know, you'll have a number of the extremes of the Republicans vote against it and then parade it out there saying that they're being victimized. I mean, that is the grievance politics that they've been running in. I think what's more important is that the Justice Department does its work and press forward with people who actually aided and abetted those who stormed the Capitol and rioted at the Capitol.
Janet in Strongsville, Ohio, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Tom, thank you for taking my call, and also thank you, Representative Khanna. I just real quick, I want to just say you have no idea the tsunami of ads every day, all day, into the evening for Medicare Advantage. So please, please keep you and Representative Pocan, keep after that bill, please. It's as if we're having something again taken away from us. But my question for you is, it has to do with Nancy Pelosi's retirement. Well, not retirement, but her giving up leadership. And all I ever hear about is someone named Hakeem Jeffries. I'm wondering why you aren't running for leadership. I mean, I look at what you stand for, and there's so many other fine progressives. Why does it have to be sort of crammed down our throat, Hakeem Jeffries from the state of New York? And I'll take my answer off air. And have a great Thanksgiving, by the way.
Yeah, well, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Thank you for bringing it up, the Medicare Advantage ads. I mean, Mark Pocan and I think he would share this. Part of the reason we did this bill is all of the listeners on Tom Hartman that we're hearing from around the country where this is a major issue. And both he and I are absolutely committed to pushing this, trying to get it to pass. And if it doesn't pass, bringing this up with HHS Secretary to crack down on Medicare Advantage, misrepresenting it. You know, I would love to have progressives in leadership. Pramila Jayapal was the person we were getting behind. I candidly think it's unfortunate that there is not a strong progressive in leadership. But I like Hakeem Jeffries. I want to give the new leadership team a chance to succeed, to build bridges. And my hope is in that we can continue to work to get progressives elected. We've done a great job getting progressives in Congress. With Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, we've done a great job sort of shaping the agenda. Now we just need to win in some of these leadership positions so that progressives are in decision-making roles.
Eleanor in Staten Island, New York.
Yes, thank you. I want to know if we can ever get rid of the undemocratic Electoral College.
Eleanor, I agree with you. It is undemocratic. My sense is the best way to get rid of it, instead of a constitutional amendment, which is what it'll take, is this informal compact where if enough states can agree that they'll vote for the popular vote winner, no matter what happens in their state, and you get to 270, that will be the way to do this. I forget what count they're at, but eventually I do think they'll get to 270.
Cindy in Bayview, Idaho, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Oh, I really appreciate this show. I'm up here where, of course, abortion is illegal now, and I was just wondering if the Indian reservations couldn't somehow finagle a way to make it legal, because they have in Idaho, we do have gambling at the reservations.
Cindy, I don't know the legality of that. I know that we've looked at putting clinics on federal land. I don't know what the rules are with the tribes and what could be done, but it's certainly worth looking into.
Norm in Tampa, Florida, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Yes, Representative Khanna. My question is, I want to know, when is Congress going to do something to rein in the abuses of the United States Drug Enforcement Agency? And as we speak right now, I have a case before that has been docketed and is in discussion before the United States Supreme Court, case 226,000, you can look at this, that talks about this very same issue where they have gone on and targeted doctors and they do not have the authority to dictate the practice of medicine. Congress never gave them that authority and made guidelines which they never had the authority to do, and set evidentiary standards such as red flag. We recently had a case called Wuhan v. United States where the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that the DEA couldn't do, yet they continue to do this. And it has been because Congress has failed to rein in the abuse.
You're talking, Norm, about the DEA going after doctors who prescribe pain medication.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Congressman?
Well, this has come up before, Norm, and I think there has to be a balance. I mean, I think the problem was the pharmaceutical companies initially that made profits on opiates, and so everyone got concerned legitimately. So, and those pharmaceutical companies should be held to criminal and civil standards. But in the case of doctors that are doing their jobs, that are making good judgment, they should not be penalized if they're operating within the standard practice of medicine. And so we need to make sure the pendulum doesn't swing too far in going after good faith acting doctors. And that is something that we need to continue to investigate and perhaps legislate in Congress.
Susan, in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Yes, Representative Khanna. I reached out to Mark Kelly while he was here. I'm a volunteer for him. And I reached out in an email and told him why Medicare Advantage was a scam and that he should look up your bill and support it, yours and Senator or Representative Pocan. He came back to me and said, I support Medicare Advantage. It gives seniors more choices. I emailed him back and said, we don't want choices. We want help paying our bills. And I sent him a link to Tom's article, and he came back and sent me to a caseworker. I was wondering if you can reach out to senators like that and educate them on these things. I don't think they understand.
Well, I agree with you. That's why it's uphill. That's why it's been uphill to get Medicare for all. That's why it's been uphill to get dental, vision, and hearing for Medicare. By the way, one reason that people choose Medicare Advantage is because many of those plans provide dental, vision, and hearing. Now, they still, I think, are inferior because you don't have everyone in network because you have to get claims pre-approved. But one reason that Bernie Sanders and so many of us have been pushing to have Medicare cover dental, vision, and hearing is so that people don't have to run to private insurance. So these things are all linked, but you've got big insurance companies that are preventing sensible, common sense reform. You know, I had the delegation of Taiwan in to see me, a deputy foreign minister. And one of the things he was talking about the threat of China, et cetera, and how all the Republicans are standing with him. And then he said something as he was leaving. He said, in Taiwan, we have single-payer health care. It's absurd. No one pays anything if more than 10 bucks if they have to deliver a baby. I said, you need to talk to some of the Republican senators who are so eager to defend Taiwan about what Taiwan's actually doing in terms of the quality of life for its people. So we have a uniquely broken healthcare system here.
Deborah in Kansas City, Missouri, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question today to the senator is regarding your comment to the gentleman on the insurrection participation and members in Congress.
Oh, the 14th
and your
Amendment.
Comment was, yes, the 13th and 14th Amendment. And my concern is, why is this now necessary to have Congress, a majority vote, which is the same party that participated in the insurrection? To me, that's just passing the buck down the road, and nothing's going to happen to these gentlemen. We just say, oh, what a shame. Something needs to happen. I don't understand why, if that's in the amendments, why is it now necessary that this same party is going to be allowed to pass the buck?
Deborah, I share your frustration. This is why ultimately we need the Justice Department. Ultimately, this is why I have called for a separate agency in the federal government that actually goes after corruption, that goes after misconduct by elected officials, because I don't think Congress can police itself. But until we have that agency, right now that authority is with the Justice Department, and that is our best bet.
Congressman O'Connor, Vice Chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, representing California's 17th District, the Silicon Valley area, in the U.S. House of Representatives, on the line with us for the hour in our National Progressive Town Hall meeting, taking your calls. We'll be back with more of your calls for Congressman Khanna in just a moment. You can find his website at Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A, .house.gov.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. We'll be right back. The Tom Hartman University Book Club today, we're reading from League of the Iroquois by Lewis Henry Morgan. This was first published in 1851, the same decade that Charles Darwin published Origin of Species. This was a big deal at the time. And when there were still, you know, Iroquois to be talked with and whatnot, you know, living the way that they were living. So this is from page 89, structure of the league. This is just basically how the Iroquois Confederacy was put together in kind of an anthropological perspective. In connection with the power of the tribes to designate the sachems, those are the wise elders, it should be noticed the equal power of deposition. If by misconduct a sachem lost the confidence and respect of his tribe and became unworthy of authority, a tribal council at once deposed him. And having selected a successor, summoned a league, a council of the league, to perform the ceremony of his investiture. Still further to illustrate the characteristics of the tribes of the Iroquois, some reference to their mode of bestowing names would not be inapt. Soon after the birth of an infant, the near relatives of the same tribe select a name. At the first subsequent council of the nation, the birth and name are publicly announced, together with the name and tribe of the father and the name and tribe of the mother. In each nation, the proper names were so strongly marked by a tribal peculiarity that the tribe of the individual could usually be determined from the name alone. Making as they did a part of their language, they were all significant. When an individual was raised up as a sachem, his original name was laid aside, and that of the sachemships was itself assumed. In like manner, at the raising up of a chief, the council of the nation, which performed the ceremony, took away the former name of the incipient chief and assigned him a new one, perhaps like Napoleon's titles, commemorative of the event which led to its bestowment. Thus, when the celebrated Red Jacket was elevated by election to the dignity of a chief, its original name, O-Titai-Nani-I, always ready, was taken from him, and in his place was bestowed Sagoye-Wat-Ha, keeper awake, in allusion to the powers of his eloquence. Each tribe in the nation thus formed a species of separate community. The members were all of consanguinity, and all their relationships are easily traced. In like manner, those of the same tribe in each of the other nations were their consanguini, and their relationships, near and remote, were also traceable. As two tribes were necessarily joined in each family, there was a perfect diffusion of tribes throughout the nation and throughout the league. So whenever somebody got married, they had to marry somebody from a different tribe. It's remarkable. In this manner, the race of the Iroquois, although consisting of different nations, was blended into one people. The league was in effect established and rested for its stability upon the natural faith of kindred. It now remains to define a tribe of the Haudenosaunee of the Iroquois. From the preceding considerations, it sufficiently appears that it was not, like the Grecian and Roman, a circle or group of families, for two tribes were necessarily represented in every family. Neither, like the Jewish, was it constituted of the lineal descendants of a common mother. On the contrary, it distinctly involved the idea of descent from a common mother. Nor has it any resemblance to the Scottish clan or the Canton or the Switzer. In the formation of an Iroquois tribe, a portion was taken from many households and bound together by a tribal bond. The wife, her children, and her descendants in the female line would, in perpetuity, be linked to the destinies of her own tribe, while the husband, his brother, and sisters, and the descendants of the latter in the female line would, in like manner, be united to another tribe and led by its affinities. Herein was a bond of union between the several tribes of the same nation, corresponding in some degree with the cross relationship founded upon consanguinity, which bound together the tribes of the same emblem in the different nations. The Iroquois claim to have originated the idea of a division of the people into tribes as a means of creating new relationships by which to bind the people more firmly together. It is further asserted by them that they forced or introduced this social organization among the Cherokees, the Chippeways, the Mississaugas, and several other Indian nations with whom, in ancient times, they were in constant intercourse. The fact that this division of the people of the same nation into tribes does not prevail generally among our Indian races favors the assertion of the Iroquois. On the other hand, the laws of descent, at least of the crown, among the Aztecs, dimly shadows forth the existence of a similar social organization, which may have been reproduced among the Iroquois or preserved through a remote affinity of blood. At all events, it was the life and strength of the Iroquois League. Of the comparative value of these institutions, when contrasted with those of civilized country and of their capability of elevating the race, it is not necessary here to inquire. It was the boast of the Iroquois that the great object of their confederacy was peace, to break up the spirit of perpetual warfare which had wasted the red race from age to age. Such an insight into the true end of all legitimate government by those who constructed this tribal league excites as great surprise as admiration. It is the highest and noblest aspect in which human institutions can be viewed, and the thought itself, universal peace among Indian races, possible of attainment, was a ray of intellect from no ordinary mind. To consummate such a purpose, the Iroquois Nation were to be concentrated into one political fraternity in a manner effectively to prevent offshoots and secessions. By its natural growth, this fraternity would accumulate sufficient power, and then they go on to, by affiliation, to merge everything into one common family. A remarkable book written in 1851, League of the Iroquois, Henry Morgan, Lewis Henry Morgan. And welcome back. Roger in Seattle, listening on KBCS. You are on the air with Representative Khanna.
Hey, thank you very much. I have a question regarding the Social Security with the like the firemen and the teachers. Well, I'm a railroad worker. I've put in when you were paying $32 a month for Social Security, I was paying $100 a month for the railroad. But I also have over 20 years of Social Security. And can I get on that list with the railroad workers and the teachers? That's it. Thank you.
Well, my view is anyone who has worked and earned Social Security should get to keep that Social Security, regardless of what job you do afterwards. I mean, that is money you work for, you've earned, you should keep it. If you go and then become a teacher, a firefighter, a railroad worker, that shouldn't disqualify you from the work you did and the Social Security you earned. And that is the bill that John Larson has to fix the windfall exemption provision. And that is what many progressives are pushing for a vote. We haven't been able to get a vote in the House. Just honestly, we've had people be reluctant to vote on some of the provisions there. In my view, that's a mistake. We need to vote on this Social Security bill.
Dee in Altadena, California. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yes, I would like to find out about the January 6th hearing committee. Are they going to move that to the Senate so where there's going to be a majority if they're not going to do anything with it right now? Because if it comes, if we wait until after the new Congress comes in, then it may never be tabled. And I understand that somehow they're propping Marjorie Taylor Greene up, you know, to hold either speaker. So I mean, it's kind of scary. And I thought that weren't they part of the January 6th insurrection? You know, weren't they supporting it?
So where does this go, Dee? Thank you.
Well, I think it's an ingenious suggestion, actually, to have the Senate continue some of the investigation. I don't know Senate rules, but if they could, that would be one way of continuing the work, because obviously the first thing the Republicans are going to do is shut down the January 6th committee. And I share your view that we need to continue to investigate it. And it's also going to put more continued burden on justice, which ultimately this is a law enforcement matter. Look, people broke in to the Capitol for all the law and order talk. I mean, they literally broke in. They barged past police officers. They threatened to kill people. This is not political. This is criminal. That people engaged in criminal acts, and they have to be held responsible, as well as people who directly aided and abetted them.
Congressman, we just have 30 seconds to the break. Has there been any clear information about whether members of Congress, some members of Congress, were actually giving guided tours to the people who then participated in this assault on the Capitol?
Tom, I've just seen public reporting on it, and I don't think that there has been any significant investigation or results of that.
Is the Ethics Committee looking into it?
I do think the Ethics Committee is looking at it, but candidly, this is beyond the Ethics Committee. This is a Justice Department issue, and my hope is that they'll give the results of their investigation. If no one did it, then they should come out and say that, and if people did it, they need to be held accountable.
Yeah, amen. Congressman Ro Khanna is with us for the hour, taking your calls. You can find his website at Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A, .house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. His new book, Dignity in the Digital Age, is really worth checking out as well. We'll be right back. Change starts with you. You can be calling your Democratic or Republican representatives to let them know what you think by calling 202-224-3121. It's the Capitol switchboard. It'll get you right through to them. Congressman Ro Khanna with us taking your calls. And Tim in Aloha, you are on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yeah, what's happening with Marjorie Taylor Greene, what are you guys going to do pursue some action against the Supreme Court to increase the number of people here? Because that isn't just a 2 or 4 year or 6 year reign. We're talking about generational. This is scary stuff, you know. You're going to have to get more people in the Supreme Court, or what you can accomplish is going to be destroyed, just like the Affordable Care Act and everything else.
Well, what I've recommended is term limits, and that is consistent with what the president's own commission has said. No one should be there more than 18 years. Every president should get 2 appointments. After you're done in the Supreme Court, go to the appellate court, and that would significantly reform the court and not have these absurd situations where people are there 40, 50 years and making decisions that are totally out of touch with everyday reality of people's lives.
Raymond in Douglasville, Georgia, you are on the air with Representative Khanna.
Oh, thank you for putting me on. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Rep. Khanna, for your good work. Very simple question. My mother is enrolled in WellCare, and we'd like to get her switched up back to Medicare before the deadline. How do we do that? Thank you.
Please contact our office or your congressperson's office, and they can help with that in the casework. I assume WellCare is a Medicare Advantage plan. You can switch back in open enrollment, which is around now, to Medicare. You have to be careful to make sure you get the Medigap insurance, which is often supplemental, and sometimes Medigap insurance can deny those things if you're switching back. And that's why it's harmful for people to switch in the first place if they don't know all the facts. So please contact one of the caseworkers, either in our office or your own congressperson's office, and we can try to help.
Bob in Asheville, North Carolina, you're on the air with Representative Khanna.
Hello, Representative. I have a question for you. I'm a retired state employee teacher in North Carolina. For decades, we've had Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance, and part of our retirement is that carries over and becomes a supplement for us with our Medicare. This year, with our GQP-led legislators, they've switched and dropped Blue Cross Blue Shield and forced us all onto a Humana Medicare Advantage plan, which, in my thoughts, that's going to take all these retirees out of Medicare and force them into this Advantage plan. And other callers to Tom have said this is happening in their states as well. This could be a massive loss of revenue and Medicare patient or Medicare recipients, and could really harm Medicare because of that. I don't know what we can do.
Well, my concern is not just harming Medicare, it's harming you and your colleagues, because Medicare Advantage, like I said, you have to go to in-network doctors. You have to get prior authorization to get things approved for medicine or procedures. Sometimes, too often, they deny those requests, whereas you never get those denied with Medicare. So please raise this with your member of Congress. Let's see what we can do, especially if this transfer, it seems, was done without your knowledge or your consent for benefits that you were owed.
Congressman, my understanding is that the conversation among Republicans around this is that once over 50, and certainly over 60% of Medicare recipients have shifted over to Medicare Advantage, the next time Republicans have control, you know, of the levers of power, they will simply say, the American public have voted. The majority of Americans no longer want Medicare. They want Medicare Advantage. So we're going to just shut down and phase out over the next 5 years the Medicare program, put everybody on Medicare Advantage. That'll be the end of that. And then we'll be happy to talk about Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All, because it'll be Medicare Advantage for All, which is exactly where we were 30 years ago. What do you think?
I think that's cynically right, Tom. In fact, I had an executive tell me, insurance executive, I don't really have a problem with Bernie Sanders and Medicare for All, and you're supporting it, bro, because it's going to end up being Medicare Advantage for All. People are basically moving into this Medicare Advantage plan. But people should realize that that is going to be with basically rationed care. That's what it is. It's the Medicare Advantage private insurance boards getting to decide what they want to cover. Right now, they're going after the relatively healthier population, but as people who have real illnesses continue to get select these plans, the country is going to be in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. Congressman, thanks so much for dropping by today and taking all
Thank
our
you. Thoughts. Happy Thanksgiving, Tom.
Thank
Happy
you.
Thanksgiving to all the listeners.
Thank you, and the same to you and your family, Congressman. Thank you so much. We'll be back with more of the news and more of my thoughts and yours in this kind of national town hall meeting we have here every day on the Tom Hartman program. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Never was intended to be. It requires you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.